As you know, I work at UC Berkeley. My sole purpose there is, well, I have a dual role, but my primary role is as the director of the Young Musicians Program. I also conduct the freshman choir at UC Berkeley. But as I say, as the director of the Young Musicians Program, my responsibility is to go into the public schools in the East Bay, which consist of about 18 to 32 different schools. Our program particularly seeks to offer professional instruction for students from the ages of 12 to 17, that usually includes grades 6 through 12, who are innately gifted, talented, with the opportunity to develop their skills so that they may pursue music as a professional career. I also serve as the director of the Berkeley Youth Orchestra, which services students in that same age group from the school districts of the entire Bay Area, San Francisco, Berkeley, Oakland, and all of its neighboring cities. These students are all instrumentalists who are particularly interested in expanding their awareness of orchestral techniques and learning how to play in ensembles so that they might be exposed to the professional expectations of instrumentalists. Thirdly, I am the conductor of the Advanced Band and Symphonic Orchestra at Skyline High School Arts Magnet, which is a newly formed program just this year. And it's a wonderful opportunity because Skyline is the largest school in the Oakland Public Schools District. And this program is a targeted program which requests that all of the music instructors in the Oakland Public Schools target particularly talented young people who show an exceptional ability and to point them out to Skyline. Now, this isn't just music. My role is as a musician. Hello. But this is for drama, dance, and art as well. It encompasses all of the arts. Now, the reason these programs are so important is because, as you know, throughout our country, the public school arts programs are really going through a very, very rough time due to the deficit in many city administrations. The arts are usually the first to lose funding. And I think that this is very significant. And the reason I wanted to address you is that I feel that you are very important to the
we vote for the taxes.
Exactly. To the continuation of the arts in the schools. Now, I'd really like for this to be an open discussion, but I'd like to just give you some things to think about and then to sort of discuss them in a few minutes. I know that by your being here, you are appreciative of the arts in some form. I think anyone who would come to this place has to be. But I would ask that you consider your, and you especially as a parent, and I say, I'm also looking to grandparents.
Grandparents, you bet.
to be aware of the professional organizations in your area or your particular interests in the arts. I'm sure that you appreciate ballet, the theater, cabaret, stage, musical theater, improvisational theater, experimental theater, the arts in terms of sculpture, photography, film, which has now become an extremely popular idiom, and then of course music, opera, symphony, pop, jazz, big bands, any of these considerations. Well, the majority of the personnel, 78% of the personnel who make up the professionals in the arts in America, receive their music or arts education in the public schools.
Sure.
And is it somehow misinterpreted that many of these people receive their education in a conservatory or in an arts institute? Well, that is true, but that was after they had graduated from a public school. And the fact is, when you reflect on your upbringing and on your education, I'm sure that you will remember the valuable lessons that come from music, art, and drama in elementary, junior high, and high school. I am particularly interested in talking about elementary school, because that is the medium that is suffering most in our country. And the fact is, as an educator and as a performer, I am recognizing more and more that the time to expose children to music and to the arts is in elementary school, preschool, kindergarten, and elementary school. Because at that time in our lives, we are most open, we are most interested in the types of things that the arts have to offer.
Well, that's where the church comes in, because you can give children exposure. If they're playing piano, then they can play at Sunday school, or maybe they can play with the organ on a certain Sunday, or give them exposure so that they have
it's a natural
interest. So that it's natural, yeah.
It's not forced.
Yeah.
And I agree with you totally. That is an equal role that the church plays. Mm-hmm. We all remember, you know, the junior choir or our first experience singing in the boys choir. The children's choir. We were just talking about Jesus Loves Me, and yeah. That's one of the outstanding children's, we can call it a hymn, songs in the world, because the words are so meaningful. And somehow we tend to lose the definition of that message as we mature. To hear children sing it obviously just opens your heart again.
They don't know that the children were singing.
Well, please share that. I think that's a wonderful.
I was telling you the story of my little boy when he was 4, and we lived in St. Louis Park, which is a suburb of Minneapolis, if you don't know. 50,000 people, and we had one black family. And the veterinarian moved in, and he and his wife and son were very, very black. And my 17-year-old daughter was working at the drugstore, since we have to contrive an opportunity for Jay to get to know Bobby Lewis. So we needed to take the cat to the vet, so we made the appointment, and we made the appointment with his wife that we could also come and see her and Bobby. We got there, and Bobby was used to going to Montessori, so white kids were no big deal to him, but my kid looked at this black boy, and he didn't say anything awful, but he sure looked. And so finally, the mother was trying to make him comfortable, and she said, "Will you sing a song he learned in Sunday school?" And he sang, "Jesus loves the little children in the world, red, yellow, black, and white, all our precious innocents."
Yeah,
talk about divine guidance.
Yeah, that was.
Exactly.
And then I have
another story. She has another good story.
About my grandson in Florida, and his little playmate was Clarence. Mm-hmm. And Clarence was 5 years old, and he was very black. And my grandson could hardly wait till his 5th birthday, because he wanted to be black. Isn't that right?
He thought he was going to change.
And his mother had to disappoint him.
Well, those are the types of innocent things that really are wonderful messages to us all.
That's right.
So anyway, getting back to the role that public schools play, especially for elementary kids, I think that we have a very strong responsibility as adults who are aware that the arts are just as significant as academics, as sports, athletics. And I think that the arts really help to cultivate our young people's ability to express themselves. not only in communication, but also in dealing with their emotions. The arts are an expression of man and woman. And I think that the earlier we allow children to feel comfortable mm-hmm. about that form of expression, the more that we have given them to work with as they mature into adulthood. I would also state that without public school arts programs, and they are dissipating across the country, more and more families are being forced to seek out private instruction, and more that private instruction is becoming expensive.
That's right, more and more expensive.
It's because those people who have educated themselves to teach in the public schools are losing their jobs, and they're trying to make a living. So they have to charge an exorbitant amount of money to make a living. On the other hand, the schools themselves are losing, the public schools themselves are losing some of their most talented students to private institutions. And the thing about private institutions is that they are struggling so much to maintain their budgetary needs that they end up cutting their arts programs. So here we are with a two-edged sword. We have the public schools who have no arts programs, and then we have the private schools that are emphasizing academics, which is obviously important, but they are not able to afford the arts education as well. So here we are with all of these wonderful kids of all races, creeds, developing with such potential and no outlet for it other than the church.
Well, some cities have, or through their parks program or something, will have some of these programs in the summer for enrichment, where they learn to paint and sculpt and that sort of thing.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. I was going to mention that obviously there are many organizations outside of the schools, extracurricular organizations, which are usually funded by the city or through nonprofit means. Now, the majority of the organizations that I've worked for since I've been out of school have been nonprofit organizations. But I want to make you aware of that their difficulty as well. I spend the majority of my year writing grant proposals to foundations, corporations, writing solicitations to many individuals. And what is happening is that as our culture changes, as priorities change, as the administration has been funding other things, the philanthropic organizations are not able to give as they were 15 years ago. Organizations such as the New York Metropolitan Opera used to receive anywhere from $1.5 million to $2.1 million from the National National Association for the Arts, NEA, the National Endowment for the Arts, I'm sorry. Well, their allocation in the last few years has been cut by more than 60%. So the Metropolitan Opera is receiving now about $300,000-$400,000. That's incredible.
Is that just because people are not giving as much, or is the money going elsewhere?
The money from the administration is going elsewhere. Priorities have changed. And we're not saying that change isn't warranted, but we're just saying if we don't get the money from those organizations, well, where will the money come from? You can only expect so much from individuals. And I'm sure you all receive countless letters of solicitation from many deserving organizations. What is happening more and more is that these organizations are fighting one another for the same funds. And it's not that any of them are better or worse. It's just that the strong survive. And a lot of organizations are having to combine their forces and to change their original direction just in order to maintain some sort of outlet. More and more, the children are being neglected because the people who have already been trained don't have an outlet. So my contention is that unfortunately, American society looks upon the arts too much as entertainment, not as a significant attribute to us as a people. And it is our responsibility to make the administration aware that we need the arts in our lives for many, many reasons. It's for spiritual reasons, for developmental growth, and for things that we could talk about on and on.
Well, one place where you can have something to say, I come from a small community in North Dakota, get on that school board. We need women on school boards. And then to, because it's athletics, of course, is a very, very large to go, and it has its place.
Yes.
But usually it's the singing, it's the band, it's, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's why all people can have influence. And if they aren't on the school board, they can hit the school board members, you know, and say, now this is important that we include this. But so often they, if it isn't a teacher that's already overloaded, that has the talent, you don't have a music teacher, or you don't have this. Right. Or you don't have art, especially. It's very difficult to have teachers with that talent unless they're already in. Yes.
You know, you should be sitting in my chair.
No, I shouldn't. No.
The reason I say that is because you're harping on the same things that I'm going to be talking about. And
Excuse me?
No, not at all. Not at all. And I think that you've hit the central issue. We as people have to assert ourselves and inform the school boards, the superintendents, the Board of Education of our desire for the continuation of the arts in the schools. And the only way we can do that is by numbers, by really stating very strongly that we feel that this is an equally necessary component of school curriculum.
Because once they leave the school, they can continue with art till they're, you know.
Forever.
Well, and if they have the musical ability. But if you're in athletics, there are very few people that go on to play college basketball. In my case, my son did, but or college football or get a scholarship through, and great if they do. But then past graduation from college, then what? They coach. But after a while, they're 40 years old, and then
exactly. They
talk about games.
Well, that's the thing. You have to look at the significance of the arts as the public perceives the arts. Now, not as entertainment, but as an essential aspect of our daily lives. When you look at the young people who are taught how to sing and taught how to draw, and then they evolve into high school and they become actors and actresses, they become orators, they become leaders in the school as a result of the arts in many instances. Athletics serve the same purpose, but in a different way. And then when they get into college, of course you don't pursue music as your major, or pursue art or drama as your major, but you continue to participate in these organizations as a means for inner peace, inner fulfillment, expression once again, the ability to express yourself outside of the daily method of making a living. And then once you graduate from college and begin your own families and make a living, you begin to need the arts as a means of continuing to communicate expression. Arts is most definitely the expression of man, of manhood, womanhood, excuse me, I'm
humanity.
Trying to, thank you, I'll remember
and
that.
And encourage their creativity when they're little.
Still man,
you know.
I love that.
It's very important.
People,
humanity. right. Human womanity.
Now, I have an instance in our school, we had this family that were very talented musically, and this young lad had one of these beautiful high soprano voices. But he wasn't allowed in the Christmas program. Now, I had nothing to do with it, the superintendent decided, because his grades weren't high. I thought, God gave this kid this wonderful voice. Mm-hmm. And he had to sit there and watch that program because his grades weren't high. School was hard for him. But he had this talent, you know? Mm-hmm. So I don't think they can always hold grades. You know, that was in the days when you had Christmas programs. Now
yes. They
don't.
Yes. And that's the thing. We see in the last 10 years the dissipation of so many aspects of school life that were very significant during the times that we were coming up. I mean, in just 10 years.
Yeah.
Whereas Christmas programs, the holiday programs were such an integral part of school function.
Mm-hmm.
Those things are really falling by the wayside more and more. And also, with those things dissipating, our kids are losing the opportunity, again, to express themselves. I think academics, certainly, is the most fundamental aspect of school. But there's only so much that you can learn. There's only so much that you can learn how to express yourself through academics, unless we have constant oration in class, constant exchange. And that's not the way our classrooms are set up. You don't have the opportunity to have each student stand and learn how to express themselves. And that's why oratory, drama, music, people should learn how to allow their emotions to be expressed. I can't say it strongly enough. I've just seen it too often. I could tell you many experiences, but I have to tell you of my mother, who was my high school choral director. And it was a very difficult time for me, as you might imagine. And I made it very difficult for her. Because to be in the same school as your parent and to be under the scope as the teacher's son was very difficult. But that's neither here nor there. The significance is that our chorus was one of the central focuses of our high school. The president of the student body was in chorus. The president of human relations was in chorus. The president of the cheerleaders was in chorus. The captain of the football team was in chorus. The star center of the basketball team was in chorus. Every student of the top 15 in our senior class, from the valedictorian to the 15th person, was in chorus. That to me says something. Mm-hmm. The leaders of our school were in chorus. Many of them were in band. Many of them were in plays. And you find that the leaders in our country usually have a significant aspect of the arts in their development. You will see, you know, you look at the senators, and they love to sing, or they were, they attended Harvard, and they were the lead in Shakespeare, Othello, or something like this. But those are the types of things that we tend to forget, and they're not emphasized. But when you look at people's resumes, especially the leaders in our community, you will find 99.9% of the time that they had a significant participation in one facet of the arts. And there is our proof right there that the arts really has a very important formative role in our lives. So.
Well, in the 60s, when my kids were in high school, we had at least 40 in the senior choir. And when those kids marched in, you know, it was a real thrill to see them in their gowns, and they took an active part. And when the director decided not to direct anymore, we've never had a choir again amongst high school people. Mm-hmm. We had, you know, the chair choir. Mm-hmm. Very hard to get one together again. Mm-hmm. And the senior choir is so old. I mean, they are the really seniors, that the young people don't even want to be with them. And it's too bad, because hard rock and roll is, you know, taking over,
yes.
Yeah.
And I do believe that rock and roll has its place in society. When you look back to the 15th century, and you hear all of the Renaissance music and the chant, you'll also note that the jongleurs and the gondoliers were very, very popular in their time, and they just moved from place to place. But when you look to the when you look to the 19th century, and you think of all of the operas that were going on and all of the plays that were going on, well, the common practice of the day in Italy was to sing the most popular aria of an opera, La Donna Mobile, which we all know. We may not know the title, but we all know that tune. Dun, 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 da, da. They've used it in over 35 commercials on television.
Yeah.
Well, I learned this from a professor of mine who was from Naples, Italy, and he was saying that is just the medium that we use today is the same medium that was used centuries before, except they didn't have television. It was done by word of mouth. And you'd sing La Donna Mobile to 15 different tunes, or to 15 different texts, but it was the tune that made it such a popular idiom. And then, when the opera was performed, everyone in the audience sang along with the soloist.
Must have been fun.
Yeah, I can only imagine.
Well, have you read this book by Dr., I don't know that I pronounced it right, Buscaglia?
Yes, that
Italian.
Is.
Buscaglia. Their whole family knew these arias. They'd get together, they'd be riding along someplace. Their mother was a singer, was a soloist apparently, and the whole family knew all these operas.
Mm-hmm.
But when they got to wherever they lived, San Francisco, wherever, they were looked on as, you know, different because they were this Italian family that loved each other so much and hugged so much. Mm-hmm. It was very interesting. I think everybody should read it.
Right. Thank you. You don't know the title? I'm sorry, I don't know that.
Oh, it's something about loving.
That's it. That's the title. Loving.
Loving.
Loving and something. Did you enjoy it?
Oh, I haven't read it.
Leo Buscaglia.
It's great. It's.
Yes.
I think it is.
Now, even to carry this forward, I would like to give you an idea of what's happening in the Bay Area public schools, and it's such a horrible thing. And I am going to make an effort to fight it as much as possible. What they are doing now, I don't know who made the decision, but they have decided to cut the programs in the elementary schools. All right, to cut the music programs. So that there aren't even singing ensembles going on from the first grade through the seventh grade. Now what they've decided to do is to carry on the choral program in junior high, the music programs in junior high and high school, which seems to me to be...
But how are you going to take kids in junior high that have never had the background for their 6 years?
Exactly. Yeah. You have my point. And but this
church, yes, the church has responsibility.
Church choir, right.
Yes, they have a responsibility.
But this is where we have to look at our leaders, and all of a sudden I see the contradiction in the fact that most of these leaders have had some form of art in their background, yet they're the same people who are cutting the programs.
Maybe they fear competition from other artists going into politics.
That must be it. That must be it.
Since bedtime for Bonzo is competition.
See, I would think the other way. You do the first 6 years, we have music, and then you will pick, you'll know which one that especially talented that should have maybe some special opportunities.
We've established a coalition among the music instructors who are still in the public schools. And we're going to try to make an argument directly to the Board of Education at the beginning of school. Just to express our anger, frankly, at the audacity of this program.
But they're still going to have to go to the voters for every mill levy they're going to add, and everything becomes more expensive, and the dow becomes greater no matter what you're voting for.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. So we have to be aware, just as we have to be aware about education. One of the things that's going on now, as you all know, is that it's becoming more and more difficult to get into college, and requirements are becoming much more strenuous. That's another reason that the arts are being de-emphasized, because with the increased level of academics, the day has become full. And in a 6-period high school day, kids who have to fulfill their math requirement, their foreign language requirement, their history requirement, their English requirement, and also participate in leadership and government, there's no time.
That's right.
So what they've done often is to have band, chorus, or theater after school, and even more so now, they're having it at 7 o'clock or 7:30 in the morning, which is pretty ridiculous to have a student get up at 5 o'clock so that they can ride a bus for 2 hours. This is in the city. In different instances, obviously it's not the same. But it is horrendous to expect that a kid would enjoy themselves at 7 o'clock in the morning trying to produce musically or dramatically before 8 o'clock in the morning, before breakfast.
In
this
small
school,
towns, the only difference is that the parents or the kid has to get the kid there at 7 o'clock because there's no bus.
Exactly.
But they're still having to get there at 7
at
o'clock.
At 7 o'clock. It's pretty ridiculous. So there has to be an expression of concern a major expression of concern from the community before this issue will legitimately be addressed by boards of education. And I think it has to be done from the local level. We have many professional musicians, Pavarotti, Domingo, Isaac Stern, Leontine Price, so many well-known names who consistently voice this expression, you know, on the national level. But so many small communities have no idea who those people are, you know, or an interest. It is the responsibility, I think, of the church and the community at the local level to just enforce the inclusion of the arts in the public schools, especially for our young people. I really would feel much more satisfied if they were to do away with high school programs than to do away with elementary programs. Again, students are so impressionable. Mm-hmm. We are so impressionable in our youth. And that's when we learn so much. It's the type of thing that they will never forget. Whereas in high school, I'm sure a teenager would much rather choose an avocation to work in a job like McDonald's,
yes,
as opposed to learning how to play the trumpet in the ninth grade.
And get your boy up? I mean,
of
that's
course
money
not.
And the...
Of course not. And that's another thing about, I mean, we're getting into philosophy, but I am so aware of the fact that high school students now are so concerned with getting a job,
yeah,
or making a dollar.
Get a job so they can buy a car, which they need to get to work to have the job, and it balances.
Exactly.
It
exactly
takes a lot of time.
And I tried communicating with all my kids to make them aware that they're going to be working for the rest of their lives anyway.
Right.
You better enjoy what life has to offer you while you can. The majority of the kids in the Young Musicians Program are from low children or so.
Probably have no piano.
Exactly.
Not an organ,
no instrument
at all.
Can't afford anything.
Yeah.
But the thing that I am most impressed by is the fact that their families are the most supportive in terms of their pursuing that art, that particular art form, and are aware of the significant benefit that it will have on their lives. And I think if those people who are struggling on a daily basis have that awareness, that it is that much more essential to make people who can afford to send their Johnny or Mary to private lessons at the age of 3 to be aware, just so that those people can voice their concerns too. I've found that so many people who support the major professional organizations are the same type of people that you can rely upon to support the local public school programs, if only they are made aware. Now, I don't know if any of you are professional artists, I mean educators, but that's the only way that the community can find out, is through our vocalizing the issues. So I appreciate your participation today and your awareness. And I especially encourage you, grandmothers, mothers, fathers, future parents, to please make it known in your community how important the arts are to our young people.
And then go to these programs that our little grandkids are in. That's terribly important.
Almost.
we have something in Florida in our trailer parks. The Head Start program has, well, maybe, I don't know how many children, but maybe 1,000. But they have little choirs, and these little tots come in their red choir gowns and their white little collars, and we give them a treat afterwards, and they sing their hearts out, dashing through the snow, and Jesus loves me, and he's got the whole world in your hand. It makes Christmas for all of us.
Yes, yes.
And it's then the Head Start teachers are with them, too. They're largely black children, I think underprivileged, but mm-hmm. they've gotten an end. You know, by able to, and such exposure, and they come around, they hug people, and it's really wonderful.
That's
I wish
true.
We could see more of that.
That's true. And too, you will find that those children who have been exposed, I say, not just to singing, but to speaking. I was so thrilled when we had the Holden Village kids the Narnia to present that service. And the fact that they read with such inhibition, and even when they made mistakes, it was okay. It was okay by them, and it was okay by our congregation as well. That's reinforced support. And I assure you that those kids, once they reach that difficult stage of adolescence, will be that much better prepared to work through those psychological demands. Whereas the kids who haven't had an opportunity to express themselves, to learn how to communicate, when they get it to this, that stage, that very difficult stage in junior high, it is so difficult. It is so difficult. And if they haven't had group organizations to sing or perform, then it is, I've just seen it too often, kids who don't know how to express their fears, their concerns.
It helps to grow their self-esteem.
Yes.
They can get up and do something.
Yes.
Feel good
yes.
about themselves.
And even, you know, even when you're concerned, you're looking in the mirror every day at that new pimple, and you're looking at hair grow and you know, the appendages that are changing, and you see, you grow 5 inches in one summer and you don't know what to do, you're tripping over your feet. You can always go back to that organization and give and participate in a group function where you're not the only awkward one, or in another instance, you have that wonderful gift of expression, whether it be speaking, drawing, painting, whatever it is. You may feel goofy at one point, but there's another part of you that is being supported and that has already been established that you can use as an anchor to pull you through those difficult times. And I've seen it so much. I've just seen
it. Well, like young people reading the scripture, taking parts in the service itself, being ushers, and then the cantors that sing the...
Exactly.
You know, there's so many opportunities.
Right.
If we do it, you know, if we let the young people have a chance.
And that's it. You said it. I mean, it's so important to involve young people in service and in the activities that go on. Because by allowing them to participate, it also allows us to learn from youth. I am an extreme advocate of the ability to gain insight from young people. You know, we were talking about it earlier, where the scriptures say, out of the mouths of babes. That has been substantiated so many times in my life. And just like the Jesus loves me, just I know, this I know. That's exactly the innocence and the foresight that children have to offer in so many other mediums.
But in some churches, they feel that youth work has to be planned activities for these kids. You go on a hike, you do this, you do that. Well, if kids want to do it, if they have anything better, they'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care how well planned an activity is. If the kids don't take part, the parents don't insist they take part,
mm-hmm.
it's not going to flourish at all. But this way, but a lot of people won't volunteer. A child may not volunteer to read something, but if you ask them and encourage them, they'll do it.
I really wish you could have been here. I think it was last week. There was a major forum on the conflicts between youth, particularly high school youth, and their parents. And a lot of the same issues that we've addressed today were covered, especially in church youth activities, and the fact that it seemed that a lot of the kids were saying, well, it seems to me that our youth program only wants to get rid of us. They just want us to get in a group with a couple of chaperones and send us away for a weekend so our parents will have some free time.
Well,
now, that's insight. That's insight. And they say, you know, the issues that we'd like to address in the church, usually we aren't asked to participate in. And we find that in so many church functions where we just feel the kids are a little too young or they don't know yet. If only we'll involve them and give them an opportunity, we'd be amazed at what they have to offer.
Well, even passing out bulletins, we have some little ones that are about that high. And they can pass out a bulletin, you know.
Most definitely.
I think my little boy opened up my eyes when he sang Have No Fear, Little Flock.
Mm-hmm.
And we sang it, was it
Sunday night. He sang it in church again, and mm-hmm. he sang. Uh-huh. And that's the first time he's ever sung in church because mm-hmm. he knew the song.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and so we sing songs in church that the kids don't know.
That's true.
You're not allowed to have a hymn book because they're going to rip it or they're going to drop right. it on the floor mm-hmm. and they can't, you know, they can't go to communion, they can't do anything.
In many
so
things,
why,
right.
You
know, and
I mean, you haven't been through all those years when you're holding the hymnal going like
not
this,
yet.
So the kid yeah. knows what to
he's
say.
Only five, so he can't read
it. Well, he can't read it that well.
But that was...
Next year.
That was something that opened my eyes into what we should be doing in the children's choir.
Yes.
Teaching them more of the
hymns
that we are singing
right.
in church.
A lot of times
even
we...
Even having the congregation sing
right.
some hymns that yeah. children sing.
Well, you're right. That is so important. A lot of times, I mean, we're crossing over into exactly what I'm going to talk about. You know, my second topic later on this week is the arts in the church, and that's exactly what we're talking about. Allowing children to sing the hymns that we sing. A lot of times in church programs, they only teach kiddie music, and the kids come out during the service and they perform one or two hymns. Two songs, and it's wonderful. But then we don't allow them to enjoy singing the hymns that really bring our spiritual emotion forth, you know, allow us to become that much more excited. They are just as capable of providing us with that emotional lift. I think one of the memories in my life was, well, I'm from a Baptist background, and now I can't remember the name of the hymn. Dum da dee 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 dee.
What a friend we have in Jesus.
What a friend we have in Jesus. And our entire children's chorus sang the soprano line. And still, I was 9 years old, and I can still remember the sound of all of those
uh-huh.
pure voices over the congregation. And I mean, it was at that time, that's one of the things that made me know I'm in the right business. I mean, I had chills running up and down my spine at 9. And what happens is that after this musical lift, then you go back and say, well, why? Why was I so uplifted? And then you make the kids aware of what they were singing about. You know, what was this text about? And before you know it, it's the type of thing that they take to heart just as importantly or significantly as we do.
Well, one thing about solos. At my age, I love solos that are like the hymns that we know, the songs you know. So often a solo, they got a captive audience. So then they're performing all the doodle-doodle-doodle stuff. And when you're through, you haven't gotten a message.
That's true.
But if somebody gets up there and sings it as well with my soul,
uh-huh.
my daughter sang, Blessed Jesus, Blessed uh-huh. Jesus. That's just a hymn.
Uh-huh.
And you can't believe the number of people.
The beauty.
And how still the church got.
Mm-hmm.
She prays before she sings. Mm-hmm. And she always picks this like it is well with my soul. She prays that it will reach people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And in Florida, they were real glad she was in the choir. And she thought it had something to do with her voice. They said, it's so nice not to see a wrinkled face.
It's so cheap, trying to get that high note, you know.
But with a lot of us who've been in the Lutheran Church for 70-some years, so help me, where do they get these unfamiliar tunes?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
And then it's a matter of really trying to impress your congregation with your artistry as opposed
yeah.
to trying to share your spiritual gift.
Then you start out, you think, I know that tune. They've right. changed it. They put words, oh.
Oh, yes.
That's this new green book.
Mm-hmm.
That new green book we've had for 20
years. Yeah, right. That new green book.
I still get lost.
Yeah, there's some very complicated arrangements in that book.
And beautiful if they're sung by a group who...
Right, and if they're taught. But when they're not familiar, and if they're not... exposed, if the congregation isn't exposed, it's
that's
more of a mental exercise mm-hmm. than it is an expression.
Yeah.
Right.
But I think we should
do both.
I mean, the old ones were new ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I mean, some of both.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it does depend on. Mm-hmm. I'm just speaking for me.
Well, I would appreciate that. This is an open discussion, you know, they promote
yeah,
discussion.
But it's all on tape.
Yep. Well, it's valid. Hopefully other people will listen. So thank you very much. I'm open to any other topics, any other issues concerning this topic. But it's obvious that you're aware. And again, I say, first we have the responsibility to our families to make sure that, to our young people to make sure that they're exposed. And then we have the voice to express our concerns to the local governmental bodies who form policy. And if they know, and if it's expressed loudly enough, I think that we will be able to reestablish the importance of the arts in the schools.
Were you at the lift the night we all came up like?
No, I don't think so.
There was, Brian, what's his name, was playing his penny whistle, playing all kinds of Celtic music, Scotch and Irish stuff. And one of the tunes he played was the Sky Boat Song. I was in my fourth grade elementary school, songbook. Mm-hmm. Apparently it's been around for a while. So he plays this, and this woman in her 70s got up and said, "I know that one, I know the words, and I want to sing it." So he played again, and she sang along, and it was just so beautiful that, she learned it in grade school, and it was
exactly
still there, and
that's
she was
right
going to share it.
And so many people are being, so many young people are being deprived of that,
yeah,
that particular,
yeah,
melody or tune, that's for sure. Yeah. Another thing, we've ended basically, but, I look at the educators who are coming out of schools now, those primary school teachers who are so talented, yet they are expected to give so much. They're expected to be musically inclined, artistically inclined, as well as their particular emphasis. And that is just not fair to the kids, and it's not fair to expect that much of primary school teachers. Whereas, if you'll remember, in most public school situations, there was a music instructor and an art instructor who would rotate.
Mm-hmm.
And they would teach one class at least once a week, and they would be responsible just for making sure. And I remember Mrs. Adams so clearly, my art instructor, and I remember in the first grade, she told me, "Boy, are you talented." From then on, I thought I could draw. I thought I was going to be the greatest. Well, I just realized when I was 21 or 2 that, boy, I couldn't draw. But what a thrill and what an opportunity she had allowed for me to believe in myself. And that really helped to make me who I am today. And I will always, we look back at educators that you treasure as important people in your life. And she's one for me.
Well, my grandson got passed from second grade to third grade, and he loved his teacher so much he said, "I almost wished I didn't pass."
Right, right. I want to stay in the third grade again.
Second, yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Enjoyed
very
this much discussion.
Are you having this tomorrow too?
Thursday.
Oh, shucks. We're going.
Oh, you're leaving tomorrow?
Yeah, yeah.
This is the same. You're in the same
room. Yeah.
But now you have a very good trip lined up. You're going away.
Oh, wonderful. We've had such a wonderful trip.
Mm-hmm. Where do you go from here?
Well, we go to Spokane and Bozeman and Medora and home, but we came by way of Canada. We had 4 nights in Canada.
Oh, how exciting.
Regina, Calgary, Banff, Lake Louise.
You went through Banff.
Oh, yes. We just had a trip out of this world. It was just gorgeous.
Did
the
you get a chance to hear any performances at Banff?
No.
Yeah, okay.
No. We stayed overnight and then.
Because they do have a summer festival. Banff is one of the top music, arts institutes in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And they have an absolutely wonderful program. And during the summer, people from all over the world come to study there.
And I think Winnipeg, too, with this ballet.
Winnipeg,
yeah,
it's such a wonderful city.
See, we're directly south of Winnipeg, so we can get up there. You can go up there in the morning and then back at night, or it's better to stay over.
Mm-hmm.
Then they have horse racing too.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any idea how our country has such a great emphasis on sports over the arts?
Over the arts.
I mean, why can colleges
It's a major, major fundraiser for the school system.
But how did that begin? Why can't it be the same?
Why can't it be on equal footing? That's a wonderful question.
Televised rights. Nobody is going to pay money, pay $100,000 for a commercial on somebody's college choir concert. And they will for a football game.
Yeah, I mean, and it's on television. Mm-hmm.
That's very true.
Well, my son got practically a free ride for playing college football.
Mm-hmm.
I felt kind of guilty about it, but it was legitimate. It wasn't anything that was wrong about it.
Mm-hmm.
It sure helped.
Oh, most
college
definitely.
College expenses, you know.
I couldn't have gotten through had I not been able to sing and play, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. It has its place, but I think there is an overemphasis, or else we're allowing.
It's good to be, you know, for the team or, competition and that kind of thing, but it seems to be a little imbalanced.
Yes, most definitely.
Everything takes place. Yeah. Second place is sports.
Sports.
And the newspaper has a whole section on sports,
and
a little tiny square.
One column on arts.
That means what movies are in town and what's on TV tonight.
Yeah. The girls felt that they were being disenfranchised, that they... And now we've got girls into athletics, so athletic funds have to be split.
That's
now,
true, even more
with
so.
Basketball and that sort of thing. And it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's great, I think. Because otherwise it was all for the boys' sports.
Right.
It seemed that way anyway.
So things are changing gradually.
Women's rights, you know.
But I just wonder how it all began, how it developed that way.
Well, you know, athletics in America, especially football, baseball, and basketball, were all created here toward the end of the 19th century. Whereas the arts sort of was brought a lot of what's popular now, you know, the opera medium, the classical music medium. The only real form of American expression of the arts began or became established really in the 30s, 1930s, and since then. That's when we began to recognize what was coming out of America as opposed to always performing things that had been brought to the country. And then we had to go back and recognize the Native Americans and their contributions. I mean, for many years they were just, you know, recognized as
I think that's when WPA or PWA, whichever it was in too, in the 30s when the government was making some allowances to unemployed people mm-hmm. to do this. And I think the arts developed at that time.
Mm-hmm.
People were able to take advantage of that.
Is there then in the European countries more emphasis on
arts? Oh, you wouldn't believe. I have to tell you how I became, I mean, I was very athletic myself. I know I'm a little diminutive, but in high school I was able to play high school football and basketball and did very well. And as I said, my mother was my choral director, so there was no way I wasn't going to participate in some musical idiom. I mean, she didn't say, you have to be in chorus, but you have to, we would prefer that you participate in some musical medium. And at that time, in order to stay away from mom, I was a trumpeter. And so I played in the jazz band and in the symphonic band. Well, I received a wonderful opportunity my senior year in high school to travel to Europe with an organization that sponsored students from 35 different states. And there were about 78 of us, and we went to Europe and performed in 9 countries, performed over 100 concerts. But the point from what you ask, this is when I began to recognize and appreciate my talent as a musician. We stayed with families in Switzerland, Italy, Austria, Germany, and each family was so supportive and appreciative of the talent that we had as individuals, and also just, I so hope that you will be able to become a musician for your career. All of the schools in Europe are supported by the government in their arts programs, so that there is an assurance that the arts will be established in public school. And usually, come junior high level, students who show a particular ability in whatever idiom are sort of directed in that particular area. So there's a music school, there's a mechanics school, there's a science school, not English, languages. But these things are really established in the beginning schools. You look at that system, I think it should be studied very definitely, because kids speak three languages in the second grade. Kids are sight singing through solfege and being taught how to perform on the piano in the second grade. Here, you know, we are just beginning now to teach foreign languages in the elementary school. It's been going on now for a little while, but
we've stopped doing it in high schools and colleges.
Right, right. For so long, you were only required to take Latin in your freshman year, and then Spanish, French, or German, depending on where you were in the country, in your sophomore and junior year, and then it was an option. Whereas now they're beginning to really emphasize the languages in, I think, fourth and fifth grade.
And I think their athletics is in gymnasium, that they do have special emphasis on physical education.
Oh, yes, they
it's
really...
It's not in this type that we have in the United States. Oh, they have special teams, sure, but...
But a lot of them, they go to school 6 days a week, too, and they go to school 2 months longer than we do. We have just set up a different set of guidelines. And I know that you're aware, in California, I should say, that they are really making an effort, due to the overcrowding of schools, they're making an effort to establish a year-round school program where students will go to school 8 months of the year, and some of the students of those schools will be out during the summer in July and August, but other students will be out in December and January, and other students would be out in March, so that the school is an ever-continuous process. And those students who wished to continue would always have that option.